action at Kresge.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Laura. Coming up today, we're going to open the phone lines and talk about the nuclear agreement that was announced this morning at a historic summit in Singapore between President Trump and leader Kim Jong-un of North Korea. We're going to open up the phone lines later in the program. We'll also hear a good segment of the Democratic debate from last night that took place in South Florida, where four of the candidates who are running for governor we're debating. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, inevitably, open phones lead to a discussion about President Trump. And here's what two listeners had to say.
I was listening to your show yesterday about Trump. And I'm to the point to where Trump represents 40%, they say, of his base, 40% of the people in this country. And I believe that. But his views speaks for those people. I'm baffled that there's that many people in this country, millions we're talking about, tens of millions that we're talking about, that are so heartless and so selfish and so one-minded and so gullible is the best form way I can express it. I mean, totally gullible, mindless to accept these things that he says without checking it, and then things that he does without verifying it, and not realizing that this man is a total con artist. But for some reason, their one-way attitude and their selfishness and their me allows them to support him. It's Congress too. I'm really baffled that as a country that we're come to this point. He represents people that are walking around us, that are in our family situation, that feel this way. It's frightening. That's the only word I could say. It's terrifying.
St. Petersburg, I'm independent. Two things. Rick Scott, when he first time running for governor, people don't seem to remember the GOP, the Republican Party, itself came right out with a agenda saying, do not vote for this man because he's never come clean on the biggest Medicare fraud ever. And I sent it to a lot of my Republican friends. I'm independent, but I sent it to them. I said, your own GOP says don't vote for the guy because he's never been clean on any of his involvement. And the second thing, President Trump, he has a history, a pathology of lies. He's a pathological liar, and if you do that, you tend to cheat and steal. And he's got a history of cheating in business. He's driven people out of business. He didn't pay them as he was supposed to, bankrupted some people, et cetera. But also, he's authoritarian. He's used to being like a little dictator. And if you know anything about Putin's life history and his views and his agenda, Trump is carrying out Putin's agenda quite well. Dividing our allies, etc. I mean, that's all part of Putin's agenda.
Well, there you have some listener comments that came in after yesterday's program. Just a note about our fund drive that ended last week. We came up short, but we are closing the gap, and we're only $8,000 away from reaching the goal that we need to raise so we can get through to the fall. So if you haven't made a contribution to WMNF, boy, it would be great if you could. This is a listener-sponsored radio station, and every dollar that people donate goes to support the programming here at WMNF and keeps the radio station on the air. So if you haven't made a contribution yet, if you haven't had a chance, now's a great time. We're trying to close that $8,000 gap. You can go to WMNF.org and make your contribution there, WMNF.org. Well, we're going to open up the phone lines a little bit later on in the program to talk about the announcement today about an historic agreement between the U.S. and North Korea over what's going to be the future of the Korean Peninsula. We'll open up the phone lines and talk about that in just a few minutes. But first, let's go back to last night in Broward County, where the four Democratic candidates for governor held their third debate. We're going to listen to a part of that debate that features Chris King and Andrew Gillum and Gwen Graham and Phil Levine, who are running for the Democratic nomination for governor. One of the other new candidates who just announced last week did not make the debate last night, apparently didn't. Jeff Green didn't meet the criteria for getting into the debate, so we still haven't heard from him during this election season. But let's listen to a portion of the debate. And as usual, everything you hear here on WMNF, you can comment about. The easiest way to comment about it is just email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. We're going to open up the phone lines later and talk about Korea, but here is last night's debate among the Democratic candidates for governor.
Please join me in welcoming to the stage our co-moderators for the evening, PBS NewsHour's Yamiche Alcindor and WLRN's Luis Hernandez.
Well, the debate, I promise, is just about to start, so not sure what's going on with the sound, but it will come back in just a moment. This is WMNF in Tampa, and we'll hear the debate from last night in Broward
County.
Good
evening, everybody.
Hello, and welcome to the Florida Freedom Forum debate for the gubernatorial...
Hello? There it is.
Hello and welcome to the Florida Freedom Forum's debate for the gubernatorial Democratic primary. I'm Yamiche Alcindor, White House correspondent for the PBS NewsHour.
And I am Luis Hernandez from WLRN Public Media. And it's okay if you do say Luis Hernandez, soy Latino, it's okay. So. We'd like to thank all of the co-sponsors of the program tonight and the candidates for participating in this evening's debate. Tonight's debate is broadcast live on WLRN Radio. It's streaming on WLRN.org. It's also going to be on PBS.org/NewsHour and on NewsHour's YouTube channel and Twitter. Now, we're going to start tonight with moderator questions. Each candidate's going to have 1 minute to answer, and they will be allowed 2 30-second rebuttals throughout the debate.
We will also have 2 opportunities for questions from members of the community. The candidates will have 1 minute to answer those questions. And as a reminder, please be respectful of the candidates and hold your applause until the conclusion of the debate, except now as we welcome our 4 candidates to the stage. Mayor Andrew Gillum, Mr. Chris King, Mayor Philip Levine, and Representative Gwen Graham. Thank you.
Now we're going to begin with opening statements by drawing. Mr. Gillum will go first, followed by Mr. King, Mr. Levine, and finally Ms. Graham. Mr. Gillum, you have 1 minute.
All right. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
My name is Andrew Gillum, and I am so exceedingly proud to be here this evening. I'm running for governor for anybody who has ever been told that they don't belong, that they don't come from the right family, don't have the right pedigree, don't have the depth of a bank account. Although I'm the mayor of Tallahassee, Florida, I'm from Miami-Dade. I grew up in Richmond Heights. To my mother, who was a school bus driver, and my daddy, who was a construction worker, I'm the 5th of 7 kids and the 1st of my siblings to graduate from high school and the 1st to graduate from college. I want you to know that there's not a person in my family who doesn't understand what it means to see intergenerational poverty interrupted at the hands of a good public education. I believe that we're running for governor as the most unapologetically progressive candidate because I believe that's how we're going to win the state of Florida, by leaning into who we are and not against who we are. And with your support, I hope to be the next great governor of the state of Florida.
Okay. Mr. King.
Good evening. I am running for governor because I am not satisfied. I am alarmed. Florida has big challenges, and I believe it has small politics. I am a progressive. I am an entrepreneur. I am a lifelong Democrat. I built an affordable housing company from scratch the right way, by paying living wages of $15 and up, by providing full health care, by making sure every employee made a bonus. That might not sound like the typical company, but I believe you can do well by doing good. So I launched a different kind of campaign, one that said, we can't solve our big problems with conventional politics. And so I've advanced new ideas, like dismantling the school-to-prison pipeline, like taking on the sugar industry for the benefit of our environment, like rattling the cage of the NRA with a bullet tax. I am running to transform Tallahassee and serve you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Thank you. Mr. Levine.
Thank you. Thank you all for the opportunity. And let me just say this. It's just great to be home where I grew up in Broward County, right here. So thank you. You know, I grew up the son of a single mom. I'm the second person in my entire family to graduate college. I went to public school here in Broward County, and I was fortunate enough with $500 and a pocket full of dreams to start a business and live the American dream. And I'm running for governor to level the playing field, to make sure everybody has the opportunity to live the American dream. In Broward County, I washed cars, I parked cars, I washed dishes, I scooped ice cream on Sheridan Street right at that Baskin Robbins. But I can tell you this, the opportunity for us is to make sure everyone has opportunity. Estoy postulando para ser gobernador de nuestro estado porque yo quiero que toda la gente de nuestro estado tiene la oportunidad que yo. I'm running for governor that we level the playing field. Great education, the best environmental policy, health care for everybody, and to pass an ERA amendment and make history together.
Thank you
everybody, for the opportunity.
Ms. Graham.
Thank you to the organizers of this event and all that you do every day to fight social and economic injustice. I grew up about 15 minutes from here, and it's so great to be back in South Florida. The soul of our country is under attack by Donald Trump. The soul of our state has been crushed by 20 years of Republican rule in Tallahassee. I am running to restore our promise to public education. I am running to guarantee a living wage for every Floridian. I am running to make sure that we have affordable and quality health care. I'm not running for the title. I could care less about the title. I am running to make sure that the soul of Florida is restored to the people of Florida. I am running for you so that I can wake up every single day and work for you, the soul of this state, the people of Florida, and I look forward to this debate. Thank you.
Thank you again for your opening statement. So we're going to go ahead and jump right into our moderator questions. And we're going to begin tonight with the issue of gun violence and gun control legislation. In 2018, under pressure from parents and students, led by those from Parkland, where 17 people were killed at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, lawmakers passed gun control legislation, Senate Bill 7026, the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School Public Safety Act. Now, one provision of the law raises the age someone can buy a firearm from 18 to 21. It provides money for mental health assistance at schools and for tighter security at schools. If you are governor, is this law enough, or do you want to do something different? Ms. Graham, we start with you.
It's absolutely not enough, but I am glad it was something. After 20 years of the gun lobby having total control over Tallahassee, I'm so proud of the students and their ability to get this legislature to do something that is positive regarding gun safety measures. But we must do more. We must ban the sale of military-style assault weapons. And I have actually proposed an executive order. There's a Florida statute that lets the governor, whoever she may be, issue an executive order banning the sale of military-style assault weapons. We also must ban the sale of high-capacity magazines. And yes, we must invest in mental health care. Florida is at the very bottom for mental health care in our state. So we've got to not only invest in our communities, but also invest in our schools so that the schools have the resources to identify and help young people before they get to the crisis point. So, Lewis, I'm glad something happened, but much more is going to happen in gun safety in the state of Florida when I'm the next governor.
Next up, we're going to go to Mr. Gillum on that question.
Indeed. And I first want to acknowledge that tomorrow we will commemorate the death of 49 individuals who died 2 years ago senselessly in the Pulse nightclub shooting. This evening, I'm wearing a button from one of the siblings of such a survivor, Ada Wright and her brother Jerry Wright, who died in that incident. I also have the privilege of having invited here this evening as two of my guests, Miss Sabrina Fulton and Miss Tangela Sears, both women who lost their children, as you know, and Miss Fulton's case as it relates to Trayvon Martin due to senseless laws called Stand Your Ground, which have no place in the state of Florida, and we ought to repeal it as soon as we can.
Control your applause.
Some of you called that I was sued by the NRA because I failed to repeal an ordinance which said you cannot shoot guns in city parks. You can't shoot guns in parks where our kids play and families picnic, and I'm proud to say that we beat the NRA once, and we're going to beat them again once we get to the governor's mansion.
Thank you, Mr. Gillum. Mr. Levine, you're next on this.
Lewis, I'd like to take this opportunity because I understand that we have the parents of Joaquin, who was killed at Marjorie Douglas Home. I know Manuel and Patricia Oliver are in the audience here tonight, as well as teachers from Douglas Stoneman. And I think on behalf of all of us, we need to welcome you and applaud you for being here tonight. I can say on behalf of myself, and I think I probably speak for everybody here, we will ban assault rifles in the state of Florida. We will make sure we have better background checks. We will make sure that those folks with mental health issues are not able to buy weapons in the state of Florida. And as I said before, if I'm honored to be governor, we will create an ESA, an Education Security Administration, that makes sure that our schools are safe going forward, because no one should go to school, no one should be in fear of having an education in the state of Florida. Thank you.
And now, Mr. King.
Lewis, this is one of the most difficult issues that we face as we're running for governor and as we seek to lead the state of Florida. As many of the families that were just mentioned bear witness, everywhere I go, moms like the mom of Maurice Hobbs just last week in Jacksonville come up to me with a button of her son on her shirt and saying, Chris, I've been with you. I've been with you the last year. But you must stand up and do something different. You've got to bring fresh ideas. You know, as Andrew said, I'm from Orlando, and 49 people died 2 years ago, and nothing changed. No laws changed. That's one of my inspirations for running for governor. First speech I made as a candidate, I said, we're going to ban assault weapons. And last month, I came out with one of the most ambitious gun proposals in Florida's history, a tax on bullets that would fund the types of programs that would combat gun violence
in
the Sunshine State.
We're going to stay on the issue of guns a little bit. For almost a year, Florida failed to review background checks for concealed weapon permit applications. Agriculture Secretary Adam Putnam, who is also running for Republican gubernatorial nomination, says his office revoked the concealed permits of 291 people after discovering the background checks had not been reviewed. All of you suggested Putnam should drop out of the race. Almost 2 million Floridians have a permit to carry a concealed weapon. As governor, what changes would you make to the concealed weapons permit application system? Mr. King, we'll start with you.
Well, I think, Lewis, first, as everyone in this audience that probably read that article late last week, we were speechless. We couldn't imagine, and for the families who have lost loved ones to gun violence, this is unimaginable. I mean, it's why I'm running for governor. because the state of Florida and the people in power and Adam Putnam, who is running for the Republican nomination and will be a very strong Republican candidate for nearly a year, did not abide by background checks for thousands, tens of thousands of concealed weapons permits. It's a huge problem. One of the very basic things we can do is at least follow that law and do the background checks that we already have on the books. But the bigger idea, what we must bring to Florida, and every family here who's suffered from gun violence know, is universal background checks. That is the big idea that can combat so many of these things, and I'm running for governor to do something about that.
Ms. Graham, you're next.
Well, Adam Putnam should resign. Should resign immediately.
Hold your applause, please.
Pardon? What happened in the state of Florida was under his watch, and so he is responsible for all of the concealed weapons permits that were issued without a background check. So what we must do is we must have universal background checks. We must make sure that the gun show loophole is closed. You can go to a gun show today and not follow any rules. You can get a gun. You can buy a gun on the internet. The prevalence of these assault weapons on our streets, they're killing our children. It is time that we get control of the gun culture, the gun lobby that has taken over Tallahassee. When I'm governor, when I ran for Congress, they spent $300,000 against me to beat me. Guess what? The gun lobby lost when I ran for Congress, and they're going to lose again when I'm elected governor.
Mr. Levine, you're next.
First of all, you know, in the private sector, if you had done something as incompetent of what Adam Putnam had done, he wouldn't have to worry about actually resigning because he would be fired, okay? What he did was a travesty. Can you imagine? You're the commissioner of agriculture. You pretty much have two main jobs. Number one, you need to grow the agriculture industry and the citrus industry. We know he's failed at that because it's nothing but declined over the last 7 or 8 years. The other thing you're in charge of doing is making sure that these concealed weapon permits are background checked properly. He has failed at that. So not only did he fail at it, you notice how he responded to it? He's the bus driver. He took one of his employees and he just kind of rode right over him and responded that it was the employee's fault and not his fault. He didn't take the blame. I all think we believe here. We know what we need to do with gun safety. We all agree on this dais what we need to do. The question is, if we're not able to do it because the legislature is bought and sold by the NRA, not responsible for anything, we're going to take it to the people of Florida, and you're going to make sure that we set Tallahassee straight via a ballot referendum. Thank you.
Mr. Gillum.
The actions by Mr. Putnam were a complete and total dereliction of duty and responsibility. 291 weapons had to be reconfiscated after a year of being on the street. Now, we know of the mass shooting incidences of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, Pulse nightclub, the attempt at the Fort Lauderdale airport. But what about the countless gun violent incidences that ravage neighborhoods, communities every day of the week? Every day of the week. So not only did we call for the commissioner to resign his position, but this is also a man, leadership starts at the top. He's going around bragging about the record number of concealed permits that his office was able to release. He wears it as a badge of honor and has himself, in his own words, called himself an NRA sellout. It's very clear to me who Adam Putnam works for, and it's not the people of the state of Florida. We ought to open up an independent investigation and get to the bottom of what happened. And at the end of the day, somebody ought to be arrested for putting the people of Florida at risk by not following the law.
Again, if you can, please hold your applause. We know that everyone's excited, but we want to get to as many questions as possible. Let's now focus on the economy and specifically the issue of minimum wage. A full-time worker making minimum wage in Florida earns around $17,000 a year annually. Mr. Levine, as mayor, you advocated for a $13 per hour minimum wage in Miami Beach, which translates to just over $27,000 a year. But the average rent for a one-bedroom in Miami Beach is between $21,000 and $22,000 annually. How does a minimum wage worker live in Miami Beach when housing takes up around 80% of their expenses?
Great question. Thank you so much for allowing me to address that. I could tell you that I'm the only mayor and the only city that attacked this issue and raised the minimum living wage in Miami Beach.
and I am proud of what we did. Now, unfortunately, the governor, the state of Florida, and the Retail Federation sued us and stopped us from implementing what we put together. I believe we're going to win in the Florida Supreme Court, and I believe it'll be a model for us statewide. The question is, what should that number be? Statewide, it could be 13, it could be 14, it could be 15. It's whatever, as high as we can get it. But you know what? The people of Florida in 2004, they voted on a referendum and a ballot measure, and they said, let the local communities set their minimum living wage. But unfortunately, the folks up there at the Kremlin, they decided that the community shouldn't be able to do it. I'd love to see it at 15. I'd love to see it the highest we can get it. But we've got to start somewhere. We started in Miami Beach, and we believe we'll win in the Florida Supreme Court. Thank you.
Thank you. Some of you have said that you want a $15 per hour minimum wage. Others have not specified what rate you'd support. But my question is, why do you believe in raising the state minimum wage instead of allowing individual cities and counties to create their own minimum wage based on cost of living? Mr. Gillum, I'll start with you.
Well, I will begin by saying that I have fought preemption law and even started a statewide, now national organization to push back on these kinds of preemptive restrictions on governments. Now, the mayor of Miami Beach does talk about having raised the minimum wage in his city. Unfortunately, no one got the benefit of that increase because it was not able to be implemented. And my city, everybody who was a full-time employee in the city of Tallahassee city government earns what is a livable wage index for our community. I think on this issue, we should have no ubiquitous speak. We should be very, very clear about not being ambiguous and saying that we believe in a $15 minimum wage. But let me be even clearer. I don't know anybody.
Well, our feed of that debate has suddenly stopped, and now might be, unfortunately, not the perfect time, but now may be a good time to just switch topics here, because I'm not sure I can get that feed to restart right where it should. The last voice we heard was Andrew Gillum, the mayor of Tallahassee. Before that, Phil Levine, the former mayor of Miami Beach.
We have an affordable housing crisis that's raging all across this state.
This is Chris
King. Now, the base wage in the company that I started is $15 and up, because I recognize that's just a place to begin. And what we're doing is fighting for that across the state. But the problem is, when a family is paying 50 or 60 or 70% of their income in rent or mortgage, that is a bad life. It's why affordable housing is the passion of my life. We have a crisis, not just in Miami Beach, but in where I live in Central Florida. And I have said that as governor, I would invest $1 billion in public and private money in serving teachers and law enforcement and union members and seniors and working families all across Florida. It's one of our hugest economic issues.
Mrs. Graham, you're next.
I'm running for governor because I care about the people of Florida and the lives that way too many people across this great state are living, where they're struggling. Almost 50% of the population in Florida is one paycheck away from financial ruin. You can't buy food and fix a flat tire. You can't buy food and buy your prescription medication. Enough, enough. We have got to raise the minimum wage. We have got to raise it to $15 an hour or more, so that people only have to go to one job. When I hear Rick Scott, who is here has heard Rick Scott say jobs, jobs, jobs? When I hear Rick Scott say jobs, 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 I hear, yes, you're going to have to work three jobs just to get by in the state of Florida. No more. No more. I'm going to fight for 15 to make sure that every person across the state of Florida makes a living wage, and then tie it to the cost of living increase, so we don't have to keep having this conversation when the cost of living increases and $15 an hour is not enough to live on. Thank you, Mrs. Graham.
Well, that was the beginning of last night's Democratic candidates debate in Broward County. The people that we heard, Gwen Graham, former congresswoman from North Florida. We also heard, going back, Chris King, the businessman from the Orlando area. Then Andrew Gillum, the former mayor of Tallahassee. And Phil Levine, who is Gillum is the current mayor of Tallahassee. Phil Levine is the former mayor of Tallahassee. I hope I got that right. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and you can watch the entire debate on WLRN's website. That's the public radio TV station in Miami where they produce that debate. We're going to switch gears right now because there's a whole lot of important news that I think we ought to talk about. And I want to play some of what President Trump said this morning from that summit meeting in Singapore, and the just introduce this. After hours of closed-door discussions in a Singapore hotel today, President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un concluded their historic meeting with the signing of a joint agreement. The document outlines 4 points the two leaders agreed upon: establish new U.S. North Korea relations, build a stable peace regime, a commitment from North Korea to work toward the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and the repatriation of American POW MIA remains. The agreement doesn't appear to contain any firm promises from North Korea to abandon its nuclear program, but rather opens the door to ongoing discussions. And this isn't the first time in recent months that North Korea has promised to denuclearize. Kim pledged to do so following his meeting with South Korean President Moon Jae-in in April. Here is what some of what President Trump said this morning at a lengthy solo press conference where he mentioned what he accomplished in the summit meeting with North Korea.
Past does not have to define the future. Yesterday's conflict does not have to be tomorrow's war. And as history has proven over and over again, adversaries can indeed become friends. Chairman Kim and I just signed a joint statement in which he reaffirmed his unwavering commitment to complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. We also agreed to vigorous negotiations to implement the agreement as soon as possible. And he wants to do that. This isn't the past. This isn't another administration that never got it started. It does take a long time to, you know, pull off complete denuclearization. It takes a long time. Scientifically, you have to wait certain periods of time, and a lot of things happen. But despite that, once you start the process, it means it's pretty much over. You can't use them. That's the good news. And that's going to start very, very soon. I believe that's going to start very soon. We will do it as fast as it can mechanically and physically be done. The sanctions will come off when we are sure that the nukes are no longer a factor. Otto Warmbier is a very special person, and he will be for a long time in my life. His parents are good friends of mine. I think without Otto, this would not have happened. Something happened from that day. It was a terrible thing. It was brutal. But a lot of people started to focus on what was going on, including North Korea. I really think that Otto is someone who did not die in vain. I told this to his parents. We will be stopping the war games, which will save us a tremendous amount of money, unless and until we see that the future negotiation is not going along like it should. But we'll be saving a tremendous amount of money. Plus, I think it's very provocative.
President Trump outlining what some of the accomplishments were in his meeting with North Korea's leader in Singapore this morning. So the question is, how significant or insignificant was today's event in Singapore? What do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Hope you'll weigh in on this conversation. And you can also email your thoughts about this to dj@wmnf.org. President Trump, of course, is running for re-election already. He has a campaign. They issued a press release this morning. Just about 9:35, and the headline on it is Trump Leadership Makes History with North Korea. The president's campaign said history will demonstrate that the historic summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and the initial agreement to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula was an end product of President Trump's bold and vigilant leadership on behalf of the American people. Already the president has achieved more than expected. That's what the president's own political campaign is saying about the meeting with North Korea. What do you think? How significant or insignificant was today's event in Singapore. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. The BBC has been covering the meeting extensively, and we're going to listen to a little bit of the BBC's coverage that aired this morning before 6 a.m. on our HD3 channel. The question here is, what does the agreement do for human rights in North Korea?
Stay with what it's like inside North Korea. Reporters in Singapore after his meeting with Kim Jong-un, President Trump said that he believed the many thousands of people held in labor camps inside North Korea were winners because of his agreement with Mr. Kim. The president was responding to a reporter who'd asked if he had betrayed such people by legitimizing the North Korean dictatorship. Let's speak to Phil Robertson now, who is the Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch. He joins me from Singapore. Phil Robertson, let's just remind people of the kind of human rights abuses that people like yourselves and other organizations, human rights organizations, believe are continuing today in North Korea.
Well, we have 100,000 people or more who are being held in mountain gulags, basically being worked to death. We have systematic use of forced labor and child labor across the country. We have public executions of dissidents. We have one of the most restrictive sets of sort of laws and authoritarian practices that effectively make it impossible to speak against government or form your own organization or to obviously conduct any sort of protests. So, you know, you're talking about a maxi authoritarian state, you know, something that makes Vietnam or other authoritarian states look positively democratic by comparison.
The fact that there has been no mention of human rights in the document that the two leaders signed, is that a significant oversight for you in absence? How disappointed are you about that?
Well, we see it as a betrayal of the North Korean people. These are the people who have suffered for so long under this hereditary authoritarian government. And, you know, it looks like they're going to have to suffer some more. Right now, I mean, when President Trump says that the real winners are the gulag denizens right now in the mountains, I mean, it just shows how very little he understands about the people he's dealing with across the table.
Well, when you say it's an indication of how little he understands about the people that he is dealing with, do you think it's damaging then for him to have met Kim Jong-un at all in the context of your agenda when it comes to human rights?
Well, our concern was frankly that human rights are not a part of the core agenda nor part of the statement. I mean, if this had been a discussion where human rights had really been raised and resulted in some commitments to address human rights in that communique, then I would have a very different reaction to the one I have now, which is utter disappointment, but also sort of a sad resignation that this is exactly what I expected from Donald Trump.
Phil Robertson, Deputy Asia Director of Human Rights Watch, joining us from Singapore. Apologies for the poor quality of the line, but I think we got the gist of what you're saying. Alastair Coleman is still with me in the studio from BBC Monitoring. Alastair, you get a real sense there from human rights organisations that this has been a missed opportunity. Just give us a sense of how deeply difficult it is for people who might speak out against Kim Jong-un.
It is impossible to speak out against Kim Jong-un in North Korea without finding yourself in a prison or re-education camp. They have a thing in North Korea called the thrice-cursed crime of insulting the dignity of the supreme leadership. It means not only you will end up punished, also three generations of your family. And that, so a punishment from decades ago could still be going on now, people finding themselves in prison camps which they were born into.
Alastair Coleman of BBC Monitoring, thank you very much for joining us.
That was some of the BBC coverage this morning on our HD3 channel, which is all news and talk with the BBC overnight, talking about human rights in North Korea. So the question is, how significant or insignificant was today's event, the summit meeting in Singapore between Kim Jong-un of North Korea and President Trump. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to George in Lakeland. George, how significant or insignificant do you think this was?
I think it's still too early to tell. Let's see what the results are. But you do have to give Trump some credit. I mean, I would have loved Obama to have done the same thing Trump did right now. And I even back then I thought, why doesn't he use Dennis Rodman to get in there? But it all depends on the results. I think he will not denuclearize. I mean, that's foolish. I mean, from my point, if he was from a weak country's point of view, that's foolish. You're giving up your gun. I mean, all these Second Amendment right conservatives would not give up their guns, right? So why do you expect him to give up his guns?
Even though the promise of the summit meeting was to denuclearize the peninsula, now it seems very vague how that's going to be accomplished. So you don't think that North Korea is going to ever give up its nuclear weapons?
No, it won't. Hmm. But I do think they can end the Korean War. That would be an accomplishment in itself, just ending it, and then they shut down the DMZ and they unite or kind of sort of unite, and you know, and then capitalism will slowly take over and creep into North Korea, and boom, he's out of there. The Kim family's out of there due to capitalism and the internet, and you know, all the freedoms that come with capitalism. I think it's still too early to tell if it's significant or insignificant.
All right, George, thanks a lot.
Alrighty.
All right. Great to hear from you. Okay. So, how significant or insignificant do you think the summit meeting was today in Singapore? Our phone number 813-239-9663. George mentioned achieving peace on the Korean Peninsula. The Guardian reports that there's no direct commitment in this agreement to formalize a peace treaty to replace the armistice that was signed at the end of the Korean War in 1953. A formal commitment to reach a peace treaty would require the involvement of China and other countries that took part in the conflict. So far, that is not part of the deal that was announced today between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. One other thing that was not part of the deal is that for some time, Washington has called for complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea's nuclear program. And Andrew Lankoff, the director of the NK News website, tells NBC that in an ideal world, Kim Jong-un would accept this complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization and then immediately start to ship his nuclear weapons to the U.S. or a third country so they could be dismantled. However, there's no mention of CVID in the phrasing of the document that was signed. This is because, to George's point, that North Korea sees its nuclear weapons as an invaluable insurance policy against the U.S. invading and toppling the North Korean government. So what did you think? How significant or insignificant was today's event in Singapore? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Thanks to Jan Simpson. She's our phone producer today. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Hi, Andy. You're on. What would you like to say about the agreement?
Hey, Rob. I would say it's kind of neutral because, I mean, personally, I'm not into words and speech. I mean, it's your actions that'll define you as a person or define you as a country. If I was Kim, I mean, why would Kim want to give up his nuclear weapons when he's got these big countries just breathing down his neck? I mean, that would just, I don't know, I don't see it. And I certainly don't see him shipping the weapons off to somebody else just to have them intercepted by a rogue state and use them on somebody else. But right now it's just all words. It looks good, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens, because it's the actions they're going to speak.
All right, Andy, thanks a lot. Thanks. Good to hear from you. And let's go to Ed in St. Pete. Ed, how significant or insignificant was the summit today in Singapore?
So far it's insignificant. I would have to give Trump the admit that getting anything done with North Korea with a nuclear deal is going to be very difficult, because there is not much incentive for Kim to give anything up, because that's how he stays in power. And he doesn't mind his people suffering, so we don't really have much leverage. But my expectations were low because we have a president who doesn't even bother to study up ahead of the deal and who leaves a day early. I mean, all they wanted was that they both were desperate to have that look like something got accomplished, not really get something accomplished. I sort of feel like that old Leave It to Beaver show, Eddie Haskell. What would happen if the kid in high school who never read the book, who never studied and just tried to bluff his way through, was in power? I feel like our president is Eddie Haskell. He just, BS's his way through things and claims victory, and nothing really has been done. He's looking for the spin, not for the results.
Wow, Eddie Haskell. You get points for that, Ed. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Extra points for Eddie Haskell mentioned. A classic of American culture.
Maybe a reference that won't fit too many younger people.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know if Leave It to Beaver's in reruns anymore on Nick at Night or any
it is.
Of those. Yeah, is it?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ed, thanks a lot. Extra points. Thanks. All right. Thanks to Anonymous, too, for making a donation. Anonymous in Port Richey making a donation of $35. Favorite show, The Freak Show. How about that? And Tracy made an this is no longer anonymous, but Tracy and Brandon made an $80 contribution. Her favorite show is Surface Noise, which is on Wednesday nights. Thank you, Tracy, for that. You can make your contribution, too, by going to WMNF.org and making a contribution, helping to close that $8,000 gap from the end of the fund drive last week. James writes this: did anyone doubt that this meeting would not be the greatest, best meeting in history of mankind? Nobody in history could have done better, writes James. I'm just wondering, is there anything new in this agreement? Do you think that there's anything new in the agreement that was announced today based on what you've read so far and what you've heard on the radio and watched on TV? 813-239-9663. And let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Hi, Gino. How significant was the summit, do you think?
I would give it on a scale of 1 to 10. I would give it maybe a 4. Because I think one of the most important thing is we have to look at the people. If you can get in trouble and it keeps you, let's say, locked up or in prison or enslaved for three generations, that's very, very significant. And people have to know America's history. That's one thing about us. We don't know our own history. America has broken almost every treaty that they've been in, including the ones with the Native Americans. They've broken every one of those. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Trump just break a treaty with Iran? So you can't make a treaty and then break a treaty. If I was Cam, I would say, well, they just broke a treaty with them. They'll do the same thing with us, too. Thank you.
All right, Gino, thanks a lot. You raise a really good question. That is, how verifiable is this agreement? How substantial is this agreement? And how does it compare to the Iran agreement? If you were to compare the two, which is a better, more concrete, more conclusive agreement? So we're asking the question, how significant or insignificant was today's event in Singapore, where President Trump and Kim Jong-un of North Korea held a summit meeting, and it's gotten a lot of press, and we've heard a pretty good discussion about it on Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now! Ernie writes this: undoubtedly, Amy Goodman is no fan of President Trump, yet she managed to cover the North Korea-U.S. meeting in an objective way, unlike the Morning Joe bunch, who seemed hypnotized by their perpetual snarkiness, writes Ernie, complaining about a cable TV show. Ernie, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. Let's go back to Les in Brooksville. Hi, Les, you're on. How significant or insignificant was the summit?
Well, Rob, truthfully, as much as I despise President Tweet and the loving words of Elizabeth, I believe it is significant because it does open a dialogue. And without a dialogue, we have nothing. So if we can keep the dialogue going, and however many years it takes, as long as we're on good terms with the North Koreans, I think there's some hope. And that's essentially it. We have a dialogue now. We
and
have
that's a step forward. Okay, Les, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gus in Palm Harbor. Gus, you're on WMNF. How significant or insignificant was today's summit?
Rob, I think realistically it was totally insignificant, and for this reason. The 600-pound gorilla was not at the table. What is China saying? North Korea is China's client state and will not do anything without the acquiescence of the Chinese. China wants to and does control all of the neighboring states that border on the country. But yet we don't have a positive relationship with China. And until that happens, and unless that happens, the events in Singapore are window dressing.
Well, I guess the question is, will there be an attempt by North Korea to denuclearize? Will it really do that?
If China wants them to, yeah.
Exactly. So does China benefit by having a denuclearized North Korea?
That's a $64,000 question. I don't have an answer to, and I respectfully suggest there are very few people that have even delved into that question.
Do you think that North Korea is going to follow through after this meeting? Is it going to negotiate?
Exactly. Well, I think they're going to. It's window dressing. They're not going to do anything that the Chinese don't want them to do. If the Chinese tell Kim to put his feet on the ceiling. That's where Kim's feet are, the ceiling.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's a good point. I think you're right. There's a very close relationship. Gus, thanks a lot.
All right.
Good to hear from you. And just, you know, already, I mean, the announcement about having a goal of complete denuclearization was already announced in April by North and South Korea when they held their summit meeting. They pledged a nuclear-free Korean Peninsula back in April. And if you go back to 1994, the U.S. and North Korea signed something called the Agreed Framework, in which Pyongyang said it would consistently take steps to implement a denuclearization pact that was reached 2 years earlier in 1992. So you've got North Korea saying for a long time it wants to achieve denuclearization. So this morning's summit and the announcement, you got to wonder how serious is North Korea in reaching that? How serious do you think they are? Tommy writes this, I think Trump is trying to firm his own legion of doom with Russia, Saudi Arabia, the Philippines, Egypt, Netanyahu, and now North Korea. But you know that Putin would be the leader and Trump would be the right-hand man, writes Tommy with the comic book reference. Let's go to Corinne in St. Petersburg. Corinne, how significant do you think today's summit meeting was?
Oh, zip.
Zip.
Absolutely.
Why?
Zip. Yeah. The man has lied before. Come on, he's going to lie again. He's just posturing. And so is Trump. If you look at the handshake between the two of them, they were arm wrestling, man.
That 13-second handshake? Yeah.
That 13-second handshake of you could push and pull and push and pull and push and pull and whatever the heck his name is.
Kim Jong-un.
He was trying to turn Trump's hand so he was on top. I watch body language an awful lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And
well, so you don't think
my ex-Mason explained all that handshake stuff with me. Anyway, go ahead.
You didn't sense the sincerity during that handshake?
Oh no, it was all political posturing.
Yeah.
You know, and Trump is really good at that. You know, he's a great negotiator. Yeah, on TV and in his own game show, but he has failed us so many times so far. I have no faith in that man.
All right.
None whatsoever.
Corinne, thank you so much.
Good luck to us, though. The one good thing that's coming back to us, we're getting our POW, it remains.
Yeah,
back,
that's important.
And we're getting the prisoners back.
Yeah.
That is an absolute plus, and thank God for that.
Yeah, it really is important. All right. Corinne, thanks a lot.
That's my 2 cents, and we should call this, give us your 2 cents.
Okay. All right, thanks.
And keep it short. All right. Thanks a whole bunch, guys.
Thanks, Corinne. Bye. Thanks. And let's go to James in Tampa. James, we only have 20 seconds. What would you like to say?
I'd just like to say, first of all, hello.
Hello.
If we compare the negotiations that Hillary Clinton did with Iran versus this episode that occurred yesterday or today, there's a stark difference in that it was more thorough with Iran, with guarantees and actual inspection, verified. This is just, as your callers have been stating, a good show.
All right. And James, thanks a lot. It's a good point. We're out of time, but thank you for making the point. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for the Midpoint program. This is WMNF Tampa.